Well, a global economist and China analyst says the weekend moves by the Chinese to announce a blacklist of US companies and issue a white paper warning the US about trade negotiations makes an orderly end to the trade war with the US less likely. Diana Choi-Lever is the chief economist at the UK-based firm Enodo Economics, which advises global fund managers. And she says she's told her clients to prepare for a world economy split into US and China blocks. And she says Australia's government has already made its loyalty clear. When she joined me this morning from Washington, I asked Diana Choi-Lever why China is issuing this warning to the US now.
China is preparing for a long, drawn-out conflict, and this white paper explains China's position and the fault lines beyond which it's not prepared to move. It is a worrying development. It doesn't necessarily in itself has clauses that would escalate the conflict, but it certainly draws the line in a position that the US will find it difficult to move forward from here.
You've previously said that China needs a deal on trade more than the US does. Does this approach from the Chinese indicate that they may not be so keen for a deal now?
Xi Jinping is prepared to sacrifice short-term growth for not appearing to overtly bow to US pressure. It looks like during the current failed negotiations, trade talks, the Trump administration probably pushed too far. But at the same time, the Chinese also looked like they backtracked on some agreements. I've covered China for 20 years now. In my time, this is the most worried that I've ever been about the ability of the Chinese development model to pull it through.
So why are we seeing this more aggressive stance now from the Chinese if they genuinely do need a deal on trade with the US?
Because they're not prepared to cross certain lines. And we're seeing very clear-cut hardening of the lines across Beijing's leadership. And this is a president that wants to enter in China's history books. And this will not be the case, certainly not in his eyes, if China is to appear to have bowed to US pressure.
What do you think are the chances of a deal between the US and China on trade, given what you're saying?
Neither side wants a military confrontation, which is, let's say, the extreme case. And probably we're more likely to move to a situation where there is cooperation or agreements in certain specified areas, rather than I think the chances of an all-encompassing deal that satisfies both sides are getting slimmer by the day.
Your company advises global fund managers. What are you telling them now about what to plan for in terms of the US-China tensions?
I'm telling them that we are in the era of what I call the great decoupling. The world is bifurcating in an American sphere of influence and a Chinese sphere of influence. And investors have to start thinking in those lines.
China also announced over the weekend that it's compiling a blacklist of US companies in retaliation for the United States' Huawei bans. How worried should US companies be about this?
Look, both sides have to be worried because there hasn't been enough thinking on either side how to prepare for what is unfolding at the moment. The second and third round effects of the breaking up of these supply chains and how the world economy will absorb this change of the playing field have not been, I don't think, have been studied enough or understood enough. There is no way we could have had the rules of engagement staying the same, given that both sides have very clearly said they want to pursue their own way. And when we have seen that amalgamating China's top-down economy with the free markets of the West has not worked. So as long as everyone is looking through the prism of their own nationality, we are into a suboptimal outcome. In no other previous moment in the Earth's history was the planet in such a precarious condition from an ecological point of view. A lot of the problems of the world we have today have to be decided by global action. So a bifurcation is by no means the optimal outcome, but as long as everyone continues to look through the prism of their own nationality and defending their own self-national interest, I don't think we'll be heading towards anything but the great decoupling.
So do you think that Australian leaders will have to at some point make a choice between these two great powers, China and the US? One is its major economic partner, the other its longtime strategic alliance partner.
Australia has already quite clearly made its choice. It was the first of the five intelligence alliance countries to ban Huawei from its systems. To me, that's a clear-cut sign where Australia's allegiance is lying.
The Australian government has just announced a $250 million infrastructure plan for the Solomon Islands, one of the Pacific countries also receiving a lot of attention from China. How do you think this will be seen by the Chinese leadership?
The Chinese have increased engagement in that region, and clearly the West is now gearing up towards increasing their engagement in the region, whether it's the US, Australia, or Britain. So that will be another sign to China that the West is hardening its positions.
Do you have any sense of optimism about what you're seeing with China and the US and the trade tensions at the moment?
Well, I'm normally a glass half full type of person. So I have to say that every time I start discussing these issues, I depress myself quite a lot.
You say that there could be an orderly process here, but what could happen in the worst possible circumstance?
Military confrontation.
How likely is that?
Well, there's a lot of potential points of stress, and probably a critical one really is Taiwan, which of course circles back to your question about the Pacific Islands. If you'd like me to give a probability, I'd say on a 3-year horizon, because I don't think China would do anything before it sees the outcome of first the Taiwanese elections next year and then the American elections. But on a 3 to 5 year scenario, I'd say the probability of Taiwan becoming a flashpoint and a point of conflict, military conflict, at this stage would be 40%, which is quite high.
That's Diana Choi-Lever, the chief economist at Enodo Economics.